1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, I'm Damien O'Reilly and this is Liveline. Going to begin today with Margaret, who's on the line. Margaret, good afternoon to you. Thanks for contacting us.
Good afternoon, Damien.
How long has your daughter been battling anorexia?
About over 7 years now she's been suffering.
Right. And when did it begin? What age was she?
She was about 17 when it began.
And was
she was still in school.
What was the trigger, Margaret, for people that don't know how this condition or disease, is that how you term it? How it actually affects people and how it visits on people?
It usually starts off quite slowly and despite what people think, it's not really food orientated. In my daughter's case, it wasn't anyway. It would have started off with not being able to control emotions, and so people tend to find something they can't control, and usually it's food. So that's would have been where it started, and she was in school, and it started gradually, so, you know, you don't even really notice it kind of creeping in. And then, unfortunately, once it gets a hold, it's extremely hard for them to try to fight it and to get away from it.
But was there a trigger, Margaret?
No, there was no particular trigger. Mm. There was no one instance. There was no name calling. She wasn't overweight. There was nothing like that. It was just, I'd say, stress of school and, you know, that age, 16, kind of 17 age group, you know, that she just found difficult, and it started off healthy eating and just progressed from there, unfortunately.
And so it's psychological is what you're saying. That's the root.
Absolutely.
The root of anorexia.
Yeah, I would describe it, sorry, as a mental illness with a physical manifestation.
Okay.
That's my own interpretation of it.
And at what stage did you realise there was something wrong? Did you notice something? Was she trying to hide this condition, or did she seek help early on?
I noticed, I suppose, because she had lost weight, and a friend had said to me, you know, she got very thin. And at the time, my father was ill with cancer, so potentially that, you know, could have had an impact on her because she was very close to him.
Yeah.
And I brought her to the doctor at that stage, and they said she had what was called neutropenia, which is a low white cell count. And they said can be found in people with anorexia, but clearly she's not anorexic. So initially she was being treated for that, and as about 3-4 months went on, I kept saying she's getting very thin, she's getting very thin. And they said, well, we can refer to a psychiatrist. And it was at that point then that they said, yes, she had anorexia. And for people with anorexia, they're perfectionists usually, highly intelligent people.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said to her before, it was like once they said the word anorexia, she decided she was going to be the perfect anorexic. So.
And when you were taking her to the doctor, when you decided to deal with this situation, to offer help to her, what was her reaction? How did she describe what was happening to you?
She wouldn't have probably called herself anorexic, but she did realise she had issues and she needed some help. And she was determined. It was her final year in school, so she was adamant that she wanted to do her leaving certificate. And at the time, the hospital wanted to refer her to St. Pat's Hospital, who have a program for eating disorders. And she wouldn't go in because she wanted to do her leaving cert. So when she finished her leaving cert in the June, she was admitted straight into a general hospital for what's called nasal gastric feeding, NG tube, to get her weight back up to a kind of a safe level. Because when your weight is very low, they say that your brain isn't cognitively responsive to any kind of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to kind of, you know, get you back up to a certain point.
And how thin did she go? How light did she go in terms of her weight?
I can't remember exactly what her weight was at that point, but her most recent hospital admission was in November 2017. And she was at 36 kilograms, which is about 5.5 stone at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
That's tough. Now, this is very beneficial for, particularly for parents, for families, because this is a trauma that obviously affects more than the individual themselves. And, you know, it's no harm for us to actually learn a little bit more from somebody like yourself as to how this disease, how it starts and how it's dealt with, and indeed the sort of help that's on offer in this country, because you've been right through that mill, as it were. And we actually had an email yesterday. I think that's what might have prompted you to contact us, because you read part of it out yesterday on with Ronan, from a sufferer who didn't want to come on but just wanted to highlight the lack of support and post-hospital care for her. So I'm delighted that you've actually come on with us, because there are so many people out there, many of them who probably don't want to go public but are suffering. But Margaret, can I just ask you then, just to be specific about it, you mentioned the word there, healthy eating, I think, or maybe I picked you up wrong.
Correct, no, that's correct.
Is that what she called it, or is that what you called it? Or how does anorexia for a 17-year-old, how does it actually manifest itself?
Well, if I could answer that question, I wouldn't be a parent. I'd be in some office trying to treat as many people as I could. For each person, it's different, you know.
In your daughter's case, like when you say healthy eating, how did her eating change?
Okay, she would have cut out chocolate and sweets, and she would have substituted them for healthy snacks. But those kind of snacks would have been peanuts and hummus, which are high fats, you know, so I would have had no concern at that point, because, mm-hmm. you know, she wasn't on a diet from, you know, in the typical sense of trying to lose weight. It was changing her eating behaviour. But it becomes so fixated. She ended up, you know, in her last year in school, the only thing that she would eat would be scones and pizza. Now, I know that sounds ludicrous to people, kind of saying an anorexic eating pizzas, but she had become so restrictive in what she would eat, they were the only two foods that she would actually allow herself to eat.
And was she conscious of her health and well-being, or was she conscious of her weight, or why? I'm trying to make the connection between what she's eating and what she's thinking.
She was conscious of her weight, and she would, at that point, she would say, oh, I'm too thin. I mean, at that point, she didn't have body image issues, which, you know, some people would see themselves as actually bigger than they are. But as time went on, that all kind of, the typical characteristics do fall into place. So mm-hmm. although it mightn't start that way, you know, as the journey progresses, then she would see herself as, you know, heavy, or, you know, even though that she wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most complex illness, and you know, I've only tried to educate myself by doing a couple of workshops, by trying to learn about it and the thought process involved. As I said, it's very difficult.
Yeah, and just to move on then, mm-hmm. Margaret, too, and you know, thank you again for coming on and sharing it. It does sound complex, and that's the point I'm trying to get to here, I suppose, is to, you know, first of all, how it manifests itself. What, you know, the question is why. Why does it actually happen? And there are many different reasons. But just in terms of the actual care, now you said that she went to you first when you were first concerned with her. You took her to the doctor, who said she hadn't got anorexia.
Correct.
And when you left, how did you feel at that point then? Because she had something.
I suppose I was relieved that, you know, that, like, the word anorexia didn't even come into play in the beginning.
Okay.
You know, it didn't. That took, I'd say, about 3 or 4 months mm-hmm. before that word was actually used. But my point really is that, you know, my daughter spent from that November 2017, she was in hospital, a general hospital, for 6 months. And at that point, she was on a nasogastric tube for feeding. But she's in a general hospital. So, you know, there isn't the facilities. Psychiatric care is a huge part of treatment of anorexia or any eating disorder.
Yes.
And unfortunately, our general hospitals, you know, don't have that level of care. There's only one hospital in Ireland, with St. Vincent's Hospital, that has 3 beds that can take a patient with an NG tube. Now, that's for the whole of Ireland. And at that point, I was trying to get my daughter into that hospital to get the benefit of the psychiatric care along with the refeeding. And I was told I was outside the catchment area.
And she obviously needed this acute care. Was she misdiagnosed to the point that she was in a general hospital for 6 months then? No.
No, there's nowhere else. There's nowhere else for them to go. I mean, because medically they're unstable. They, you know, she'd reached such a low weight that there was issues with her blood sugars. There would have been issues with her blood pressure. That there's a danger of cardiac arrest. Anorexia is the highest fatality rate of any mental illness. So,
and was she getting the due acute care in the general hospital for her condition? I suppose the point, you know, I'm trying to get to.
She was from a medical point of view, yes. And I was very lucky with the team that were treating her that they had invested interest in trying to give her the best possible care that she had. But as I said, they knew that a general hospital wasn't the place for her. But there was there's no other facility in Ireland to take you with an NG tube. And by that, I mean all the private hospitals that offer treatment for eating disorders, the likes of St. Pat's, St. John of God's, you know, Los Bridges, any of those places, they will not take you as long as you have a nasal gastric tube in place. And the only alternative then is to be sent to the UK.
And you tried all of those, did you?
I did. Well, my daughter had already been in the UK. She was studying there at the time and had two hospital admissions while in there.
But going back to the acute care here in the likes of St. John of God's and those wonderful places that help so many people, just go back, they said that they would not take her because of?
It was St. Vincent's Hospital wouldn't take her because we weren't in the catchment area.
Okay.
We are on the north side of Dublin.
Yes, but the other private hospitals that you mentioned you were saying that they couldn't take her because?
They won't take her because of having a nasal gastric tube, which is the tube that they put in so that they can put the feed through people.
Okay.
So it's called an NG tube.
Yes.
So none of the private facilities will take you with a tube like that in place.
Is that because they don't have the expertise or they don't have the facilities to deal with it?
They don't have the facilities to deal with it, I think, because if, you know, when the tube is put in, an X-ray has to be taken to make sure that it's in the right place.
Sure.
You know? So I think it's from the medical side of things, they won't take you with the tube in.
Now, you said that from November 17, she was in for 6 months. I'm just doing the maths here. Was she doing the Leaving Cert last year then, last June?
No, she's 24 at this point.
Oh, sorry, my apologies.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
but
no, that's fine.
Okay, so let's go back. Let's go back then to when she was doing the Leaving Cert, and I just want to get through that part of it. You know, was her studies, were they affected at all in terms of, you know, the condition at that point? It was only manifesting itself at that point. But was she able to do the Leaving Cert and get through that?
She did the Leaving Cert. She ended up, she had to bring a cushion in and sit on it because she had lost so much weight that it was uncomfortable for her to sit for long periods of time. And she used to have to bring in a protein drink to try to get her through the exam. She did a good Leaving Cert. She came out very well with it.
Okay, and then on to college. And how did she get on in college?
She had to take a year out. So when she finished her Leaving Cert, she went into hospital for a month for refeeding and then went into St. Pat's for a three-month programme and then continued to do a day programme. And then she went to the UK then to start studying.
Right.
And unfortunately, while she was in the UK, she ended up with two hospital admissions over there, the first one for 9 months and the second one for 5 months.
So she's 24 now, as you said, and where is she back home here?
She's back home here now. She came out of hospital last October. So she was in hospital for 11 months. And she was, during her last hospital admission, she was made a ward abort. And I don't know if you understand the significance of that. She was refusing to have this nasal tube put in.
But she was over 18.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
And she wanted to try and do it herself, but unfortunately it just wasn't working out. She wasn't gaining the weight. So the hospital had to make her a ward of court because somebody suffering from anorexia cannot be sectioned under the Mental Health Act because it's not recognised as a mental illness.
And you as a member of the family, you can't make her a ward of court. Am I right in saying that? Yeah,
that's correct. No, the hospital has to do it. The hospital has to instigate it.
That must have been so stressful, Margaret, for you and the family, you know, with language like that being used about your daughter.
Horrendous, because suddenly I'm in the High Court trying to, you know, make sure that my daughter is kept alive, and that's what the hospital, the team in the hospital did by taking, you know, the action that they did by making her ward a court so that they were able to treat her when she was refusing treatment. It was very upsetting.
How is she now, Margaret?
She's home now, and she's receiving treatment from the community, which is the first time that we've encountered this. And part of the reason that she's been getting this treatment is because she's still a ward of court. And the treatment that she receives is she has a psychiatrist, a psychotherapist and a dietitian. And the majority of that would not be available to her, only that she's a ward of court and the HSE have to provide it.
Okay.
Because it's court orders.
It's a court order. So you're lucky. In terms of cost, is there a cost there?
No, there's no cost.
No cost, okay.
No, there's a massive cost to the HSE because the last bill we received from the hospital, not that we had to pay it now, for her 2 month stay was 56,000.
My God.
And that's for 2 months, and she was in hospital for 11 months. So look at what it's costing the state because they have not got the proper facilities to treat these people.
And that is the nub of your point. As a mother of a 24-year-old, 7 years in this situation, you look back now at the sort of help that she's received. What do you think, Margaret? Well, you're angry, obviously. You're upset, this country does not provide for what you say is the most common psychiatric condition. Am I right? Isn't that what you said earlier on?
No, well, I said it has the highest fatality rate.
The highest fatality? Even more significant.
Yeah, and the trouble is that once people reach 18... that, you know, unless they seek help themselves, you're powerless as a parent to try to get them help because, you know, you've no say in it.
Yeah.
And even at that, when she was still in hospital and trying to be referred to the community, the hoops you have to go through. I mean, as I said, only for the team that was helping me in the hospital. I mean, I had to apply to the HSE for funding at one stage and I was told she wasn't part of the community. And then when she was being referred to the community, I needed the GP referral instead of the consultant. Like, her GP hadn't seen her for 11 months because she was in hospital. And I said, well, I have a consultant's report. And I was told, no, sorry, it has to come from the GP.
And, you know, without going into too much detail, because she's an adult as well, you are her mother on here talking about it, but what's her daily life like? Is she able now at this point, with the care that is around her from the community, as you said there, is she able to live a relatively normal life?
No, not particularly. I mean, she's at home. I mean, when she came out of hospital initially, she had 7 appointments a week in 5 days, which she'd brought to all those appointments because she can't walk any distance and she can't drive. That has reduced now to she's down to 3 appointments a week. So that her life at the moment is going to her appointments and trying to see some friends. She can't work. She can't return to college at the moment. That is her hope and dream, to be able to go back to college. But, you know, unless she reaches a healthy weight, that's not going to be an option.
Okay, Margaret, just stay there because Bernadette has called us as well. Bernadette, good afternoon. You're listening to Margaret there talking about her daughter, and this is something resonates very much with you.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Bernadette. I'm listening.
No, well, like when I was in my teens, I used to eat everything in front of me and then puke.
And what age were you when this began, Bernadette?
I was about 16, 17. And, you know, it really did. Thank God I overcame it without any help. But then it led in later life that I went and I got addicted to, it is an addiction, like, and I got addicted to prescription drugs.
Right.
And, like, no, even before that I got addicted to anodyne. And that made me go. And then I got addicted to prescription drugs and then... In the last addiction, I was addicted to alcohol. After I have my family and everything, you know, I now, just
I'm just looking at your call here. This is way back in the early 70s.
Yes.
How common was anorexia, as it's now known, or that eating disorder where you were eating and then making yourself sick? How common was that? Was it a relatively new condition at that time?
There was nothing available back then.
So what sort of help did you get, Bernadette?
No, I didn't even know that was a problem back then. I just loved food, but I didn't want to get fat, and I was fat. Anyway, not fat, but I made my own clothes, but I'd made nothing that wouldn't go down over and cover my whole body kind of thing.
So that was the logic behind what was happening to you in your mind. But there was obviously an underlying problem, which was probably, were you suffering from anxiety? Was it ever diagnosed properly as to why you were like this, Bernadette?
I don't know.
Yeah. How long were you like this?
For about 2 years.
And how did you help yourself then to get on with life?
I suppose different things opened up for me.
Right.
And I moved on. But it's to do with your personality. If you have an addictive personality and these things happen to you.
Yeah. Well, Margaret talked about her daughter being a very high achiever and something similar in your case. But you're now in your late 50s or thereabouts. How are you now, Bernadette, all these years later? You've had your problems in the meantime, but how did you eventually, sort yourself out?
Well, for the last 10 years, I've been battling alcohol.
Okay.
You know.
And do you draw a direct link going back to your anorexic days to...
Definitely. Well, going back to being an addicted person, having an addictive personality.
Yeah.
You know.
And what sort of help have you been receiving, Bernadette?
Well, I've been up to St. Patrick's Hospital in Dublin.
Yeah.
At least 4 times. And I've been to Ashery. And...
Well, Margaret is there, and like her daughter's now 24. Is there anything you want to say, Bernadette, to Margaret as a mother who's really, really worried about her daughter? But, you know, she is giving her as much care and support as she can. What would you say to family members of somebody that, you know, is suffering like the way you did?
Well, you see... The eating, I don't know, at that age,
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, and she needs to listen to her.
Okay.
That's the most important thing, is to listen to her.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Well, Bernadette, thanks for calling in, and continued best wishes to you. You're doing your best for yourself despite all of that. So, Margaret, just, you know, Bernadette saying there that she had an addictive personality, and that's kind of, does that tally? Yeah. Just, are you listening to Bernadette there? Are you hearing anything?
Yeah, I am. And I think, that I would agree that there's, that can in some instances link in, they get fixated on something and it's their crutch, which can happen for people as well in relation to maybe drugs or alcohol. And, this is her crutch at the minute to get her through.
Okay, well, I'm just one other question to you. But before that, there's a helpline number. If people want to just get a pen, anybody that might be affected by what you're saying. And I'll give the number out again later throughout the programme, so don't worry. But if you have a pen handy, it's 1-890-200-444. 1-890-200-444. That's for body-wise. And I'll repeat that number a little later, and we'll put it on our website as well. So, Margaret, how just before I go, how are you feeling now? The toll it's had on you, on your family. Are you confident about the future despite your concerns? And that's why you contact us about the lack of support, the lack of beds for people like your daughter in 2019 in this country. But are you confident that your daughter is going to get well?
There's always hope, and recovery is possible, and that's what I cling on to every day.
And is that your message then to other parents listening? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's, it's mind yourself. As they say, if you don't care for yourself, you can't care for the people around you, and they also need to see and to learn from you that you need to care for yourself, you know, because in a lot of instances they have feelings of self-worthlessness and they don't have any confidence, and, you know, so
and is
they
that,
need to
is,
learn that from you.
Is that help there for you, Margaret? No.
I'm lucky in that I did a course which was run by people from the UK in relation, it was a course for carers and it was the Maudsley approach. Now, I know BodyWise are since running this weekend course as well for parents, and I would advise anybody to do it. You can be a brother, sister, mother, father, aunt, uncle, anybody. You will learn so much, and it just helps to give you an understanding of what the individual is going through.
All right. Well, Margaret, it just goes to show we never know what's around the corner, do we, for any of us?
We don't.
Never know what's around the corner. And we should always be cognizant of that. I want to thank you, Margaret. Thanks very much for contacting us.
And thank you for highlighting
no
it as
problem.
Well. I appreciate
it's,
it.
It's you that highlighted it. And it's not easy to come on and talk about, you know, somebody that you love so much as your daughter in these circumstances. But I think listening to you, I'm sure you've helped an awful lot of people that are probably listening to us at this point in time. Margaret, take care. Regards to your
thank
daughter.
You
and as you said, there's always hope.
Okay. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
At 51551. Patrick is on the line. Good afternoon to you, Patrick. You were listening to our call earlier on. Margaret talking about her daughter resonated with you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I have a daughter who has had anorexia and bulimia over the last 11 years. And I'd have to concur with a lot of what that lady said in relation to services and support that's in place for people with that. It's atrocious. My daughter lived in the north for a while, and she spent 3 months in a unit in Craigavon Hospital, but moved back into the south and was attending the local psychiatric hospital, who really was just counsellors that she was put forward to, and they had no idea of what my girl was going through, or no perception of the, you know, the eating distress. So the backup here is terrible here in the south.
And what age is your daughter now, Patrick?
My daughter is 31.
And how is she now? Would you say that she's still suffering, still battling, or is she...
My daughter has made a terrific recovery.
Yeah.
All down to a unit in Dublin that was... I was made aware of through a friend of mine who had a daughter in a similar position. Now, she has been attending... it's, you know, you go in and she meets a therapist, and then there's... groups of a Saturday where workshops where I go with her, or maybe her sister or somebody, and then during the weekend there's a workshop.
Is this private?
It is a private,
okay.
It's in Drumcondra. I can give you the name of it.
Yeah, well, if you're happy to, if you think they're happy
it's
for...
Merino Therapy Centre in Drumcondra.
Okay.
Now, I was made aware of it, as I say, through a friend of mine, and when I mentioned it to... my daughter, you know, she looked it up on that, and she, you know, she thought this was a whole new, fresh approach.
Mm.
And we initially went to it just to really suss it out, and we've been attending it for the past 18 months. I'd have to say it's unbelievable.
Great.
The recovery that I've seen girls in the unit have made. So I just want to get the message out there that, you know, recovery is possible. You know, there's this perception that, you know, that this is a lifelong thing, but I witnessed myself so many girls recover in this unit, and as I say, my girl as well is well on the way to recovery. Remarkable.
Yeah, well, so while there are question marks over the public service, certainly there are private offerings there, as you're saying, it's helping your daughter. And I'm just noticing a little trend here as well. She was in her late teens when this started, Patrick.
Yes.
Yeah. And perfectly normal, everything okay before then? No signs of any problems?
No signs at all.
Yeah.
And it disappeared when she was at college. But she was, well, I suppose everybody thinks their daughter's remarkable, but my daughter held down an apartheid job and got her degree in college and, you know, carried that on right through having this, so...
Yeah. And again, we heard Margaret talk earlier on about her daughter being a high achiever. And then Bernadette talking about her own experience, you know, describing herself as having an addictive personality. You know, I don't. Everyone loves their daughter, of course, and all of that. But you know, is there anything there that's do you see any sort of underlying reason as to what might have triggered this in your daughter at all, or was it just totally out of the blue for you and your family, Patrick?
Yeah, it was really totally out of the blue. But as I say, what I've witnessed in this unit, you know, remarkable girls of high intellect, you know, just a lack of self-confidence seemed to be the underlying, you know, that's the aspect I'd have to say. Just a lack of, and you would wonder because, as I say, these were remarkable girls that are in this unit, very intelligent and high achievers. So,
yeah. Just, I want to bring Patricia in here. Stay with me, Patrick. Good afternoon, okay. Patricia. You were listening to Margaret as well.
Yes, Margaret's story is pretty well identical to mine.
Yeah.
My daughter at the moment is living at home with us, but basically we're keeping her alive at the moment with the help of the local services who are not adequately resourced to really help us or move things forward.
That sounds very upsetting, Patricia. You're, what you say, I'm sorry for going across you, but that sounds very upsetting. The words you use there, you're keeping your daughter alive at home.
Yes, it's very distressing. It's a very difficult situation to be in. And you do feel lost in terms of where to go for help or resources. We have been on a journey for the last 6 or more years with our daughter. And, you know, there's a lot of scenarios here that are very worrying in terms of how people with eating disorders in Ireland are dealt with by the health services. So it's quite a serious situation. There's a lot of people suffering from eating disorders in Ireland, and sometimes, you know, the only time that the services will kick in is when it's an emergency situation and when people are in dire difficulties. Getting into, I suppose, when people present with eating disorders in A&E, they're often sent home. They have to be really, really sick before they're admitted to hospitals, and then they're admitted to general wards where they can often spend months and where they often end up with gastro-nasal tubes, and then they have nowhere to go, and they often have to go to court, or the families have to resort to going to court to get the proper treatment or to be sent to the UK for treatment. So we don't have the facilities. We don't have a coordinated program, even though there is an eating disorder service model for care in Ireland that was devised in 2018. But I don't see evidence of that being rolled out. There's a need for huge training, specialist units. A lot of staff are, you know, in the general hospitals or in the psychiatric hospitals are not sufficiently trained in eating disorders or how to deal with people
and
with
Patricia,
eating disorders.
Patricia, from your experience, how common is this among, you know, young women?
Very common. I don't have the statistics off the top of my head, but there are thousands of people suffering from eating disorders in Ireland.
Right.
And many people, you know, in crisis situations. And the other issue is that as far as I know, there's 3 public beds in
That's
a hospital
right.
in Dublin, and the rest is they're private. So you have to either have private medical insurance, PHI,
yes.
or you have to beg for funding to get into the private units. And some of the private units won't take very serious cases. You know, they're not able to deal with them. And a lot of those cases are sent to the UK at great cost to the Irish services
into
the Irish Exchequer.
Okay, listen, Patricia, I'm sorry for cutting across. We're just coming close to, I have to take another break before 3, but thank you very much for contacting us, and to Patrick as well. We'll come back to this tomorrow because we are getting more calls on it. I just want to give you the helpline number there for anybody affected listening to that discussion. 1-890-200-444. 1-890-200-444.